Men who? Here to talk about on this DVD that we're doing, talk about all of our issues about water. But water stories. Water stories goes way back to creation time. Water stories are still prevalent today. We still have stories. We talk about water as sacred. Water is sacred. Water is sacred because the native people gave offerings to the water, and the water gave offerings to them. Water is sacred because water is the life. It's the life source of us as people. It is the life source of our whole world. If we don't hold water sacred, then eventually water will come back and take from us what it has been giving us. Or as in the old stories, where Creator created flood to cleanse, then water is a cleanser. And maybe one day, water will be reused to flood us and cleanse us. We don't know these things. We don't know that they won't. These old stories had a lot of meaning. And everybody has a story. And that's what we're here to hear. And that's what we're here to tell. And it's what we need to keep on telling. So that generations from our grandchildren will understand not only the stories, but why is water sacred? Mana.
The story that I've retrieved is from the Panamint Valley. I belong to the Kern Valley Indian community and Menachi Intertribal. And so the tribes that I come from, there's a larger umbrella, which is the Southern Paiute, Shoshone, and Miwok. So our people were, I never really stayed put. There's a lot of intertribal. And we've been really fortunate to have our lineage kind of remain intact as far as where we came from. And so I, in lieu of the conference today having to do with water, I really took the time to search out a water story that I thought would be very appropriate to some of the issues we're facing today and the original instructions that we were given. Yeah.
Please take your
time. This is the origin of people. And most of our stories have a primary character, and that's Coyote. He always comes to play out in this, and it's very telling. So it goes. The earth was covered with water. The water dried up quickly. At this time, the birds and the animals were men. Coyote was walking along the Panamint Mountains when he saw a very beautiful woman who had very white skin. Her name was Pabin Posayats Tanlaus. She was carrying a jug of water. Coyote followed her, and when he came up to her, he said, "I'm very thirsty. Give me a drink of water." She pointed to a place and told him to go over there, and she would give him a drink. Coyote did so. When she came up to him, she again pointed to a distant place and told him to go there. In this way, she continued to put him off until they reached her home. The girl lived with her mother. The mother said to her, "Where did you get him?" Coyote went to some water and started to drink. While he was drinking, the girl tried to strike him several times, but Coyote dodged each time. Then she said to him, "You go into the house," pointing to a big hole in the house. Coyote went in and saw many bows and arrows around the walls of the house. In the morning, Coyote asked the woman who owned the bows and arrows. She told him to take them and to hunt some ducks. That day, Coyote killed ducks and caught fish, which he brought back to the house. In the evening, the woman cooked the ducks. They ate some, and they disposed of some. That night, Coyote made advances to both the girls and her mother, Coyote. By morning, the girl's belly was large. She began to bear children, putting them into large basketry water jugs. She told Coyote that they were his babies. When Coyote was ready to leave, the girl said to him, "Carry the babies in the jug. These babies will cry for water, but you must be careful. If you give them water, open the stopper only a little or they will get out." She showed him how to give them water. Coyote started out carrying the jug, which was very heavy. As he went along, the babies cried, "I want water. I am dry." Coyote said, "They are thirsty. Maybe they will die." Coyote opened the jug, and the babies all ran out. They went in all directions. The boys fought among themselves with their bows and arrows. These people became the different Indian tribes. So, Coyote is the central personality in most of our creation stories. In California, Coyote is always offering lessons in humility, and he's the creative force. All living things are people in our origin stories as well. Water is people, the mountains are people, the animals are people, the trees are people. All of them are people, and they all have jobs to do. They always have. Just like we do here now. Very important to understand that. So in this story, the earth is covered in water. At the start of creation, we find our key is water. The very beginning, water is at the beginning of all life. In the evening, the woman cooked the ducks and the fish that Coyote had hunted. So we know from this piece that ducks and fish, they come from the water. And so Coyote retrieves them from the water and brings them back. Again, the key is water. They ate some and they disposed of some. So here we find that we partake in the food that's given to us from the water. And we dispose of some, so we return it and offer it back. And that's the other key is reciprocity. I'm saying that right. We'll find that exchange is very important, the giving and the receiving. Laos tells Coyote that the babies will cry for water. She shows him how to give them water. To me, that the babies will cry for water is very telling as well. We need water to live. And Coyote is concerned for their well-being and decides he needs to give them water or they will die. We are those children. We come from these people. These are the tribes. The story is telling us that we came from these two beings, and we are the tribes. So that's a message and a warning in the very beginning. Without water, they will die. So we are the tribes from which the water carried us. So we are the children of the water. Oh.
And I'm a member of the North Fork Mono tribe, and I'm Mono and Chukchansi Indian. And this is my mother, who's cracking and shelling acorns over here. Anyway, what I'm doing right now is I'm splitting white root. White root grows along waterways. Farmers consider it a weed, but we use it on our baskets. It's the main color that we have, that we need on our baskets, and we need a lot of it. All of our materials go in our mouth, and I will show you how we split white root. And we use redbud, white root, which is sedge root, bracken fern root, and deer grass. And so,
depending on the color?
Yes, whatever color you need. And everything goes in our mouth, because our mouth is like a third hand for us. So I'm splitting it right down the middle, and you get two pieces. And so I have traditional places where I used to dig roots with my aunties, where my great-grandmother used to dig, but it's downstream from the mill. And I went to dig with my Aunt Rosalie Bethel one time, and she says, "Oh, honey," she says, "don't get in the water." And I says, "Why not?" And she says, "Because it's polluted." She says, "Well, we've seen two-headed fish in there. And it's downstream from an old mill, and there's petroleum pollution in the ground and in the water." So after finding that out, I threw away all the roots that I dug. The only root the only roots where I go to get them is in the Kings River right now. I won't dig on the San Joaquin River because it's too polluted. There's just too much going on upstream. So I have certain places where I go and dig. But clean water is something I appreciate everybody does. My mom's cleaning acorns. I was just thinking, you know, a lot of oak trees are dying, and the surface water has receded so much, and the oak trees just really have a hard time in the summertime. And I'm really worried about our oak trees because so many of them are dying, and I firmly believe because it's lack of water.
Well, I heard that it's illegal to cut down an oak tree.
Yes. It is. It is. If it's already on the ground, you can cut it up. But yeah, you don't want to cut down a healthy tree. I remember years ago when I was in my early 20s, I used to take cattle to the high country, and we'd cross the Middle Fork of the San Joaquin River. And at Miller's Crossing, some people know where that is. And, you know, we hadn't drank water all day, and so we'd drink water right out of the river. And I used to take a bath. You know, I hadn't had a bath in 4 days. And so I remember getting out in the middle of the river and just having my mouth open and just drinking all the water I possibly could and just looking straight upstream. That was the coolest thing to do. I still remember that when I was a girl. I don't know that I'd want to do that nowadays because I'd probably be worried about getting Giardia. But clean water is vital. When we leach our acorn, you can't use tap water. If it's chlorinated water, it'll ruin our acorn. It'll turn it purple. So fresh water is just so vital for everything that we do. And nobody should drink chlorinated water anyway because it's not good for you. So this sedge plant right here, that's this material right here, that came from the Kings River. Yeah, it came from the Kings River. What I'm trying to do is every time I go down there, I take those black pots and I get plants and I stuff them in there and take them home, water them, and they grow. This one has got a little deficient on water for some reason, but I intend to grow my own stock someday. The property that we own has an artesian well on it, and so it's really clean water. And so, but we're having a hard time finding places to dig because private property, people don't want you in on their property. And like I said, a lot of farmers will spray it to get rid of it. And the rest of the water is just polluted. It's bad. If we could clean up our waterways, it'd be wonderful. So, but I don't know how that's going to happen. So I'm going to have to get my own roots and grow them at home because I need so much. You know, a big tray like the one behind me takes a lot of roots. I mean, that big tray took 15 coils of these. These are bracken fern, and that's another thing I go to the high country for. I go way up high because the water's clean and there's more water, and my roots are healthier. If I dig down low, they're not healthy. They're brittle and they break. Why is something brittle? It's dry. It doesn't get enough water. So where is our water going? You know, that's what I want to know. Anyway.
Somewhere where it's not supposed to be.
Yes, I guess so. Anyway, you bet. I will continue on. And those 8 stitches were painful. I don't know why they were so bad, but they were. And now I need 3 stitches.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Oh, you are welcome. I'm going to hide this.
Just to get a little bit more about your basketry process. You mentioned that this piece right here took a year and a half.
A year and 7 months.
A year and 7 months.
Normally it wouldn't take that long, but with the video project that we did with Fresno State, I'd get a call and they'd say, "Well, you can't work for a week because the hard drives are full." Mm-hmm. And the hard drives, I think they held 4 terabytes, was a lot of information, a lot of data. And they say they're full, but we can't get up there next week. But we can't get up there till the next week. And so they wouldn't let me work. They said, we need every stitch documented. So I would just have to sit there and wait. But I can make that basket 9 hours a day, 5 days a week in 11 months. I can get it done. But that's a pretty heavy schedule. And I take Wednesdays and Sundays off because I can't work. It hurts me to work 3 days in a row. Saturday is just always a killer for me because it's like my third day. And it's like, oh, I can't sit here any longer. But I love what I do. And I'm just so happy that I can do this because if I have to have an outside job, all this gets wadded up and stuck in a closet. And that's the problem with so many of our weavers is, you know, they have to work an outside job. They're taking care of grandkids. A lot of them are raising their grandkids. So they just have a really hard time. And they weave whenever they can, but they just don't have time. But fortunately, I've been able to make a living at this. So this is what I do.
Well, you mentioned that some of your work is in the Smithsonian.
No, it's not in the Smithsonian. I went back there to do a basket weaving demonstration. But I'm hoping someday that I will have a basket in the Smithsonian.
That would be amazing.
Yes, that's my plan. Actually, I'd like for a lot of museums to have my baskets. Table Mountain Rancheria is building a museum, hopefully in a year or so, and they have several of my baskets. So I will have some of my baskets in a museum. And the new museum here in Sacramento, the California Museum, has one of my gambling trays in it.
Oh, very good.
And it's on loan from the buyer, the man who bought it from me. So it'll be in there for a couple of years. So it's there temporarily.
It's good to leave a legacy, though.
Yes. But I love what I do. 1, 2, 3. Now if I can get this stitch to go in, I'll be happy. But you just keep going round and round and round. People are always getting after me for using scissors, but they're nice and sharp, and they speed up my work, and it's very, very helpful. My great-grandmas actually figured out to use a tin can lid. They poked a hole in there for sizing our materials. So we just poke a hole. Trouble is, they don't make tin can lids like they used to. They're not as good quality.
Yeah, it's not quite tin anymore.
No. What I need to do is get some real flat steel, some sheets of steel, and make some discs, and then pull them through to see how that's coming off of there. And so it sizes it for me. But the hole's not small enough, and so I hit it one more time with my Weehee, which is my pocket knife. And so I take a little bit more off, make it just a little bit finer. I'm working about 16 stitches to the inch and about 7 coils to the inch. The buyers are always telling me, we need you to work a little finer than that. It's like, oh my gosh. Yeah, it's pretty good. But like I say, everything goes from my mouth. Can't help that. But some of our elders have lost their front teeth and got sores, and it's just been really bad. I should be poking my hole with my deer bone awl. But my great-grandma let her use a metal awl. So I think she would let me as well. If I can get that to go in there. I hope. Nope, didn't want to work. Yeah, like I said, I'm really spoiled in having really good light. I've got 5 big fancy LED lights at home, and they just light my whole room up. I got on a black skirt, and I put this white sheet on my lap to help out. I forgot that, you know, I can't wear a black skirt when I'm weaving, especially if I'm using bracken fern root. Because it just doesn't want to cooperate. This is not cooperating either.